He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
They didn't respond like collectively. They didn't respond that way. D'Lo has a little bit because he winds up, you know, getting the short straw here. But nobody else has reacted that way. And that and again, it shows it plays out to me as if they were told, "Hey, this is what we're thinking about doing." And what I've been told, JJ was very consistent in his communication on why he's doing what he's doing.
Right. And again, this is why I'm not going to keep pushing back on this, but I just always thought like a wing that's athletic was going to need to play on this team. And I think JJ saw the same thing. I'm with you. I don't think they thought Cam Reddish would start. And I didn't even think Cam Reddish would start. I think Max Christie was the guy that they thought. And look, the interesting part here is that like if the Lakers are winning and D'Lo's, you know, productive off the bench, he'll still get paid. He won't get the, you know, $30 million deal that he's looking for, but he's still going to get paid a pretty hefty amount over the summer by some team, whoever it is, if the Lakers like have a good playoff run and he's a part of that. So I'm hoping he, you know, buys into that. I always thought that this was going to be the result of benching D'Angelo Russell, even with you saying, and even if Anthony, even if every day that D'Lo came into the camp, JJ's like, "I'm gonna bench you eventually." Like if that was the wording every single
not
time
going
he came,
to, but it was an option. Yeah.
Right. Okay. But even if like that was something he was told on a consistent basis, that doesn't change the outcome of what happened. Doesn't change the feeling for him. Doesn't change the contractual situation that he's in. He doesn't have as much leverage as he did a year ago. Right. He had a player option waiting for him a year ago. At this time he's just an unrestricted free agent, so like it can go in any way. He doesn't have $18 million of gold waiting for him at the end of the season, no matter what the outcome is. I think it's a different situation as well, but hopefully he buys in. I'm skeptical of like you're about to get just a super engaged D'Angelo Russell coming off the bench.
Yeah,
for
I'm probably with you on there
for 20 minutes a night, like 20 minutes a night, like for guys used to playing 32 like to 35 minutes. Again, this is what happens when you come off the bench, though, right? You just mentioned the exceptions of Ginobili, Harden when he came off the bench for OKC. I think Jalen Williams starts now, but maybe he came off the bench. Like these, like super duped up six men, like they get their 30 plus minutes a night. But most players who come off the bench don't. They get the 20 to 22, and depends on how the game goes. And that might be where D'Lo lives at right now.
Let's shift this to a more positive conversation here. LeBron. So this happens sometimes with like great TV shows, you know, where like I'll listen to podcasts that talk about great TV shows and it just winds up being them saying like, "Gosh, isn't this show great?" over and over and over again.
Right.
You know, and you run out of ways to say how great, the TV show or the book or the movie might be. And I think sometimes we fall into that trap with LeBron. He's been so great for so long that even doing the stuff that he's like at 39 years old, three straight triple doubles he only broke his previous record of oldest player to have three straight triple doubles. What I do want to talk about here, like to make it more unique than like, "Golly gee, man, you're good," is I think the Lakers are doing some really cool things to help LeBron be great that like I didn't necessarily see as much of last year. Like how many plays did you see LeBron score off of a cut tonight? Yeah. How many times did you see LeBron, you know, getting an off ball screen and knocking down like a DHO three when the defense goes under? What are you seeing in that regard that the Lakers are doing to get LeBron going, which is, I think, really unlocked him in ways that I don't think we saw even last year?
Yeah, and just really quick before we get into the diving into that, I texted, you know, Sabrina. I was like, "What is his motivation still?" Like, I just, like, this is a random game in November, and, like, the camera, Anthony, panned on him. He's, like, gritting his teeth. Like, I don't know if the Grizzlies said anything, but he's, like, so into this game. Like, yeah. He's been on ESPN a million times. It's just incredible the motivation that he continues to have on a night-to-night basis to win. But no, like, they're doing some cool stuff. They're putting him more off the ball. This is maybe the best his jumper has been in his whole career, which is an insane sentence.
I think you're literally right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an insane sentence to say, but this is the best his jumper has looked. He just has he's like continued to master, you know, every part of the game. The Lakers are doing some cool stuff where like they're having him screen way more. We talked about Austin getting handed the keys, and JJ's being really like, if you listen to JJ on any mic'd up, he's like, let's get organized. Like, organize is the word he says a lot on every one of these. And what he means by that, like, let's run our sets. And a lot of that is with LeBron playmaking from either the elbow or the top of the key, right? Running a lot of screens, facilitating. I feel like the jumper allows him, Anthony, to really load manage within a game. Like, he had 17 points, and I don't think he broke a sweat to start this game. Like, it was very easy offense for him. He doesn't have to bludgeon to the rim every time to get a basket. He eventually did in the second half once the game got tight. But they're doing a lot of stuff for like, anytime someone goes under, LeBron's shooting. He's like, you're going to go under my screen, I'm taking the jump shot. And he's hitting at a high percentage. But my favorite thing about that is like, they're having him, you know, they're allowing Austin to kind of really facilitate and, you know, allow him to not have to be on the ball for entire games. And it looks like it's keeping his legs, you know, fresh throughout the game, and he's able to play high minutes and still be somehow like, he's the freshest player at the end of games. And like, there's like eight other like 22-year-olds on the floor huffing and puffing. And, like, he's there just absolutely in shape. It's monstrous to watch. But no, he's again, there's no other synonyms for great, but like, he's just been great. Yeah.
I think another player who deserves credit for how good LeBron looks at the ends of games is actually Rui, because of what he does on the defensive end. And there was a moment, you noticed it too, but the Lakers just kept on getting that Princeton backdoor cut that happens in semi-transition, where a player dribbles over to the wing, and then the player who was standing there on the wing empties out by way of a backdoor cut. And it was just like backdoor cut after backdoor cut after backdoor cut. And it was like everybody. It was everybody was like, if you played in this game, you got backdoor cut, and it put the Lakers in a tough spot tonight. The last one that it happened to was Rui, and they went to timeout. LeBron is like, it's the same fucking cut. It's happened 37 times, you know? And you could tell that LeBron's like, I'm 40. I can't do this. I need you guys to not screw this up. You know, I understand that, like, you know, for those of us who were watching here, it's like, well, you know, LeBron, you also got back, you know,
you think
Rui
said it like that? Rui's like, yeah, you know, yeah.
Rui's like, what was that? I said my bad. I said my bad. But like, I, you know, I was watching that exchange there, and I think the frustration there was equal parts, it's the same goddamn cut, but also like, he sees that if he is that level of focused on that end defensively, to where he's making up for all of those backdoor cuts, then now all of a sudden he doesn't have those legs in the fourth quarter or in those moments that the Lakers really, really needed it. And you know, he does see his mortality there in the mirror a little bit. And he's like, I don't have the endless tank that I had when I was even 34 years old, you know? And I say all of this to credit Rui, right? Because, you know, with what Rui has done in terms of his focus defensively so far this year, that's not to say that he doesn't space out occasionally too, but what he has done so far this year, and what AD has done so far this year, that allows LeBron to take over in those moments that he has to. Like you mentioned, what Austin has done offensively allows LeBron, and frankly, what the system has done. You know, the first quarter, the offense that the Lakers were playing in that first quarter, where the ball was moving, guys were getting into the paint, hitting corners. And you'd hit, you know, and either the shot would be open there on that initial pass of the corner, or it would be a swing, you know, to an open 3-point shooter, or another player cutting to the basket. It was beautiful basketball. Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that like allows LeBron to coast for a little bit. The game looks super easy for him. And then again, when he has to take over, he will. But that to me, like, you know, in terms of the things that I've been most pleased with so far this year, when the Lakers have looked their best, the ease with which LeBron gets to play, I think is significantly better than any point in his career.
Right. And I think that's the whole idea of the system, right? Allow them to play again, where you don't have to have LeBron and AD. And then we tried this tonight with AD, where like, instead of trying to go through Zach Edey, we try to go through him. And I always thought like the way to go, you know, around that was trying to have him screen, let AD have the ball a little bit more. And we did that at the end of the games. So I touch on Rui for a second, cause it's funny that, you know, the play you're talking about where LeBron got mad at him. I think LeBron, like, I don't, it's not for a lack of effort, cause Rui is definitely trying. But yeah. Rui has this look where, like, I'm not you. Like, I don't think the game, you know, like, my processing speed is just not at the level. Yeah. So LeBron will sometimes give players a look. And he gives D'Lo this look a lot, too, where it's kind of like, what were you seeing there? You know what I mean? And he's like, oh, like, I messed up or something. But and so it's definitely not for a lack of effort. But Rui's definitely been trying. I thought he really did move his feet. I thought he rebounded at the end of this one. I think he hit his first mid-range jumper in like four games, Anthony. Like, he had a little mid-range two that he hit as well. You could tell maybe the illness was messing him up, but it's just funny when LeBron yells at him, Rui's like, man, like I'm really trying. I just, you know, they're playing a five out system. Memphis plays a five out kind of system. That's a tough, tough offense to guard for a guy like Rui. Cause there's a lot of switching. There's a lot of, you know, handing your man off to someone else. And then all of a sudden the ball's at the rim and you also have rebounding responsibilities, which is why Memphis got a lot of tap outs and stuff like that. But yeah, Rui's been really solid. That like closing lineup, Anthony, is kind of interesting. Reeves, Dalton, Rui, LeBron and AD. Yeah. That's a little interesting. I'm gonna go look bigger, up. Kind of, yeah. The numbers. I'm going to go look up the numbers on that. But yeah, that was an interesting, like, a lot of speed, a lot of spacing. The hierarchy is kind of set, right? It's kind of like it all works through Austin, LeBron, and AD. That's the trio that like all the offense revolves around. Rui as a cutter, Dalton as like an off-ball, you know, guy that you can run actions for.
Shooters in both corners, right? Like right. you have, at any given play, the defense has to care about the corners on completely different sides. And,
right.
You know, if you think of a defense like an accordion, right. And like you stretch it out. And when it's fully like wide open, that's where you can really get in there and do your damage. Right. And, mm-hmm. and I like, man, I guess accordion isn't the best example here, because like I don't know why you would want to do damage to an accordion, but like if you just think of like, you know, any kind of fabric, right? You don't cut fabric when it's slack. You cut fabric, you get through fabric the easiest when it's pulled completely taut. Mm-hmm. And when you have two shooting threats in either corner, that's what pulls a defense completely taut. And that's when you can really manipulate that defense. And I thought there in the fourth quarter, Memphis, and for stretches in the first quarter, Memphis just had no idea what to do with the Lakers defensively. None whatsoever.
Right. And then, no, my favorite thing about that is Austin and Dalton are both very physical guards. You don't think of Dalton that way, but people watch him play. Like, that dude is looking for contact at the rim. Like, he's very much into getting contact down there and just mixing it up. And again, that puts your smallest player on the floor, being Austin, who's listed at 6'5". I think it gives you a boost of size and just athleticism. Dalton had a play where he almost broke the internet, almost dunked on Jay Huff, but Jay Huff blocked. over there, that's a Laker on Laker crime over there. But yeah, this Dalton was
white on white crime.
White on white, yeah. Dalton and Austin backcourt was interesting for sure.
All right, let's see. What else do we have here on the docket? We had AD. Weird AD game tonight. Yeah. I thought. He says that it took a little while. I'm reading some of the quotes right now. He's saying that like it took a little while to get used to the lights because of his eye. It's clearly still very like swollen and red and stuff like that. So maybe that's what's kind of going on. I thought he got into foul trouble, and I thought Jaren, like, the way that AD gets taken out of games is when the opposing big just keeps going into his chest. Like, that's always the most consistent way, I think, to get AD on his heels and then keep him there. And I thought Jaren, for most of the game, did a really good job of getting into AD's chest. ED also did that, right? Because he's such a huge human being that I don't think AD ever looked particularly comfortable out there. What I will say is, like, even given all of the, you know, the foul trouble, and I know that this guy is giving me a hard time because I pointed out, like, you know, Icy is saying they should have kept AD out of the game and he kept the energy down. I pointed out that, like, when he got that fifth foul and went to the bench and Koloko came in there, that, like, the energy picked way up. That isn't to say that, like, AD can't pick his energy up, and I thought he did. But I thought the biggest thing there is that, you know, they went to that two big lineup with Jackson and AD both playing at the same time. And the Lakers, I thought, for way too much, and you mentioned this earlier, but way too much, they just kept on slamming their head up against a brick wall.
Right. Yeah.
Trying to challenge those guys in the paint when really what unlocked everything was AD getting out there and knocking down a couple of threes. Mm-hmm. Keep shooting, AD. Keep firing away like that. And he shot those things confidently.
Yeah.
I thought low key, the biggest moment in the game, Davis comes back in and the first possession that he sees is like a mid-range jumper,
mid-range pull up,
kind of off the dribble. And he took it and he knocked it down with all confidence. It was a perfect, you know, splash. And you see that ball go through the rim like that. And I think that kind of let him ease back into the game. It's like, all right, you know, kind of like the bank with Dalton earlier. That was a moment where, like, AD's like, all right, come on. I just saw what Koloko did out there. I saw what the Lakers looked like when I wasn't out there. I got to pick up my energy. I got to get going here. And most importantly, I got to take what the defense is giving me. And he did. And he knocked down those two threes. And I think that was the difference in the game was AD hitting those shots.
And the difference there also is what I was kind of begging for, because like you said, they were just banging their head against the wall, trying to go through Zach Edey. And I think there's a time and place for that, right? I think you can't always shy away from the big body. Like, sometimes you have to kind of go through it. There's no way around it. But what I liked was on that play was a handoff from Austin Reeves, right? They're going way under it, let AD catch the ball in space, and he got into a rhythm pull-up jumper that he's probably hit a bajillion times in practice. And the next play down was I think Spain action where, like, Gabe set a screen for AD and AD got downhill and got free throws as well. So, like, again, both of those were in space. Then after that, we didn't run, I think, a single post up the rest of the fourth quarter or the final, like, 6.5 minutes. It was all, you know, the same horns kind of actions where it was LeBron and AD at the elbows with Austin working. And that's how we won the game. So I like that they adjusted to that. I get it from AD's point. It's kind of like, it's a rookie that, you know, Zach Edey, as big and tall and as huge as he is, he still is a rookie. So there's ways to take advantage of that as a big man in AD. But they play him next to, like, J-Huff started this game, but he didn't start the second half. They went to Jackson and Edey to start again at the half, and I think that was smart. They were giving us issues. It was putting AD in foul trouble. We went to AD kind of more as a ball handler role, able to get downhill and use kind of his speed and floaters and stuff like that. But it's cool to see, like, again, AD have a 6-for-16 shooting night, but, like, able to fight through that and still really impact the game offensively. Didn't get 30, but 21, 14, three blocks. That's a bad game for AD. Like, that's a really high floor for him to be at.
Interesting that he was a -6. I kind of get it because, you know, the Lakers went on a bit of a run when he went down with that fifth foul. Really interesting here that Cam Reddish was a -12.
Yeah, I guess that's a little strange. I'm not sure. I have to go back and watch. I think he played a lot with D'Lo. Was D'Lo a minus as well? I don't have the box score in
front. Yeah, D'Lo was no. D'Lo was a +5.
Oh, okay.
The only two. Yeah. Well, Austin was technically a -1. But Cam and Davis were -12 and -6. That's interesting. I have to keep an eye out for that. We do have some super comments here to wrap this thing up. So we get to play this bad boy. Fuck Washington! All right, the first one comes in from Justin Tindall, who writes, nobody should be happier about Dalton than Pelinka. When was the last time two rotations were benched after 11 games? Way to go, Rob. That's with Christian Wood being out and Jared Vanderbilt also not being out. So four rotation players in an already thin...
Who are the two that were benched? So it was D'Lo and who else? Max? Oh, I guess, is that
what it would, I think it would... if Dalton takes Gabe's minutes, it would be Gabe and Max.
Oh, I see. Okay. So completely just not playing is what he means. Okay. I see.
Yeah.
I'm
there with Gabe. I don't need to see him play basketball anymore.
Do you not see the defense though? Like, does that not at least, cause I can, no. Even if you don't. Okay. So I can understand it. Cause I think Gabe does defend at a, I don't know how to put it. Like, he just doesn't make mistakes defensively. Like, he's not going to reach. He's going to always.
He's steady.
He's steady, right? He's always going to do the correct coverage. And I think there is value to that. Now, is that more valuable than, like, seeing if Max can figure it out? I don't know. But I think JJ likes, it's a good word to put it, a steady hand on the defensive end. So I understand why he plays.
Yeah, and, like, new coaches tend to like that kind of a player. I just... The offense, Raj.
Oh, it's awful.
It's steadily horrendous.
Which is crazy, because when we got Gabe, I remember the conversation was, man, we're going to have to reel him in. He takes some terrible threes. You know, like, that was the conversation. And now it's, man, Gabe, can you shoot? Like, can you please contribute? I can't believe that this is where we're at.
I kind of think Gabe is at that point now where, like, sitting for a week would do him some good.
He sat for a year. What do you?
Like, yeah, but he did.
He got enough time on the fine. Like,
that's his like immigrant dad as you're ever going to sound.
You're like, yeah, get him more time on the bench. Man.
No, but like he just does not, when he shoots it. You can tell he's shooting it because he has to.
He's aiming, right?
He never looks like, you know, confident when he's going into a shot. And when I see that, normally, like, my takeaway is this guy needs to step away from the game for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
It's like golf is a really weird sport in that you could step away. Like, I haven't golfed in like a year. And I know when I go back out there, my swing is going to feel pretty good. I'm going to suck at the short game and the touch stuff. That stuff requires a lot of reps. But I know that when I go out there and I just get back to the basics of swinging a golf club, I'm going to hit the ball pretty well. And then the more that I play and the more that I practice and the more that I focus, I'm going to completely overthink everything to the point where, like, I'm out there and I'm like thinking about hand positioning and I'm thinking about, you know, rotation of the hips and releasing the lower body. And I'm going to be completely overthinking my golf swing to the point where I'm like, I need to take a break again. This sucks. I have to step away from golf for a little bit because I'm completely overthinking my swing. And when I watch Gabe out there on offense, he just looks completely, he looks like Charles Barkley trying to swing a golf club on live TV, where, you know, it's just like, I don't know how you arrived at that swing. I don't know what steps were taken that would get you to that final destination where that is a swing you're comfortable with in front of other human beings. But mistakes were made. And we gotta back away from the sport to break those mistakes.
So I'm not gonna try to analyze golf. I do like Top Golf. It's a lot of fun. I played that. It's a fun sport. But with Gabe, like, his jumper's not broken. He said he's 100% healthy. Like, this, I don't know what is causing this ability to just forget how to shoot. I think for him, we just did this whole thing on Dalton, how seeing a bank shot go in. Like, if we remember in the preseason, Anthony, both of us were like, Gabe looks kind of solid. Like, he looks okay. But his shot selection in the preseason was he was getting to those mid-range jumpers. He was hitting the bank shots off the glass. He was getting to the floaters that he was hitting, you know, in his career in Miami. Where has that gone? Now it's all threes. His whole shot diet is threes and... He had a drive to the rim today that was like, what are you doing? He drove against three people and had it just absolutely ripped away from him. Yeah. And it's just not Gabe Vincent basketball. It's just, I don't know what has to be, you know, done.
But that was aggression for the sake of aggression. It was like, I got to do something. I need to feel like I need to do something here. And that's a terrible way to play basketball. You know,
yeah.
It's just, you know, and it's a fine line too, right? Because like when Gabe looks his best, he's going to make some of those plays where he drives into that like really tight window and you're like, what are you doing? Okay. You know,
yeah, you live with some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nowadays, though, it's like, well, like, he steps onto the court. Like, what are you doing? Like, all right. The next one here comes in from Brandon Omeng, who writes, Dennis Schroeder, Dorian Finney-Smith, and De'Ron Sharp for D'Lo, Rui, Hayes, and the picks. Dennis Schroeder would then be your sixth man. Dorian Finney-Smith and Vando as the starters with AR, LeBron, and AD. Dorian Finney-Smith guards the threes. Vando guards the ones and twos. So the AR is the weaker guard defensively. What do you think about that trade?
I have a hard time like envisioning Vando right now. Like just seeing that name there, just, you know, kind of, yeah. I see him on the bench and it's really tough to kind of envision. I mean, that's not a bad deal. D'Lo and Rui giving up both and picks for Dennis, who we let walk anyway. And so, De'Ron Sharp, I'm not sure is really ready for the role that like we kind of need him for. The real prize in that to me is DFS. I like Dennis a lot, but I think DFS would be kind of the prize. But I mean, it's not terrible deal. I could see that being done. This is all, you know, dependent off if Vando's actually, if Vando's healthy, which I have no idea. And I have a hard time evaluating anything with like Vando being like by Brandon has Vando as like your starting forward, which, you know, it's a huge role to have a guy that just is not available for long stretches.
Yeah. I've said this on the show already, and I think I've tweeted this and I've definitely typed it in Slack, but the fact that we are barely to mid-November and we're already getting the like super brief, kind of annoyed, yeah, no update on Vando, like type of updates, that makes me nervous, you know, like that really doesn't give me a whole bunch of confidence that we're going to be seeing Vando anytime soon.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Brandon Omeng also wrote, Max needs Gabe's minutes. Oh, actually, this is a fun topic. What do you think of, would love the rotation to be ARJV, Rui, Braun, and AD with the bench of D'Lo, Connect, Wood, and
JH?
Who's JH?
JH.
There has to be a different JH. It's not the one that was.
Why not? Let's go. Four guards to come off the bench.
Am I blanking? Who else? Oh, Jackson Hayes. Hayes.
Gotcha.
Okay. It's not. It couldn't be JHS.
Right.
But like the first part of that question there, Max getting Gabe's minutes. What do you think?
I think that's the eventual next step. Like if Max is going to play, and obviously the Vando I'll put separately, but I think Cam Reddish is pretty much slotted into that starting spot for now. It's funny because Gabe has been so bad that, like, you know, in a normal situation, Max would be just glued to this bench. But Gabe is so bad that it's so easy to get a guy on Max who wasn't playing well either for the whole kind of fan base mostly to be like, yeah, let's just play the younger guy, even though that he was terrible as well. I could see it. It's just I don't think Gabe is going to lose his spot currently. The team is winning 3 games in a row that they've won, 6-0 at home. I can see Gabe continuing to play, but I think that's the next step. I would understand it. And Max is going to need minutes from somewhere. But I would like Max to get some minutes with the starters, Anthony. And I think taking Gabe's minutes doesn't really solve that. But he has to start playing from somewhere. And I could see it being from Gabe's minutes.
Next one here comes from Justin Tindall. Since Gabe sucks ass, is JHS ever going to get a shot? Surely you're not going to give up on a first round pick. And he was never a part of the rotation. that's the part of it that, like, I'm like, even I and everybody in here knows how I feel about JHS. I don't think he's very good, but even I am like, you're really going to give up on him after 20 games? I guess technically 21.
Yeah.
That's insane.
While you watch Scottie Pippen Jr. cook you, right? The guy who's been in your program for 2 years. And I'll say this a little bit more quietly, but like JHS was better than Scottie Pippen Jr. on South Bay while they're at, you know, from last year. But yeah, it's just that's a tough situation. You've already declined his third year. So like the Lakers don't really have much, like they don't gain much, in my opinion, by investing him in either. That's why it's a little bit of a dark move anyway to do that. But I don't think JHS is getting any time with the big club anytime soon. It just feels like he's going to play another season in South Bay. Got hurt in their first South Bay game, which was a little disappointing. Left at halftime. So hopefully he plays on Friday, which is in 2 days. But yeah, I don't think he's getting a part of this rotation, Justin, at all. We already have five guards ahead of him. There's no entrance coming.
Yeah, I think he gets traded at some point this year. Yeah. All right. Justin Tindall also wrote in following up to that, we would be third in the East, 1 through 20 playoff seeding, please. And then we posted on Twitter, Gabe is 8 for 59 from three. He's made 8 more threes in a year and some change as a lot. No, I guess that's just the season. Is it? I think it is, right?
Well, yeah, well, 8 for 59, I think, is his career with the Lakers. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that because he didn't make very many last year. And I don't think he's made 8 so far this year.
I think he's made 3 this year, and I think he made 5 last year, which is just, it's insane. I don't get it. I've never seen, again, like the Kendrick Nunn stuff was separate because I think he was actually hurt. But like, I've never seen a player go from what we saw, and I know people want to say it was one playoff run. You can't fake a whole run, though. You can't fake a whole run. 4 rounds of fake basketball, like 4 rounds of fake playoff runs. I don't know. I think that's a tough way to evaluate if a guy goes and has an incredible 4 round run and then you call it fake later. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I really don't get it. This was a player the Miami Heat, Anthony, were running plays for at the end of games with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo on their team.
Mm-hmm. He's also a player that the Heat didn't look like distraught that he walked away.
But they wanted him back in a sense. Like,
oh no, come back, Gabe. How will we ever replace you? Where he's Tyler, you ready?
Come on, man. They were just a little far away in negotiations.
Generally speaking, like if you get replaced by a guy named Tyler in basketball and like that your team is okay with it, like not very good. Here's my thing with Gabe. All right, if I can be serious for a second on Gabe. I don't think he knows what he's supposed to be doing out there, because all of his minutes either come with, you know, playing alongside D'Angelo Russell, who has the ball a ton, or they're coming alongside Austin Reeves, who has the ball a ton, and or LeBron James. So it's some combination of those guys. And I think he's like, well, I'm not quite good enough as a shooter to be a spot off shooter. I'll try that. I need some more rhythm on the ball, so I'm going to attack the rim every so often, even though it doesn't really make some sense in this moment. I really, truly think that, like, offensively, he has no – same thing that was going on with Max. Like, the spot that they're putting both of those guys in is like, what am I allowed to do here? What is expected of me offensively here? You know, sometimes you want me to dribble, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you want me to attack, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you want those guys to get reps and I have to just fit in. Other times it's like, no, actually, we're going to swing the ball over to you and you have to make something happen with 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, have fun, bud. And what I will give him credit for is, like, you know, we started the show talking about how frustrating it is to watch D'Lo play and not respond well to a role that doesn't make much sense to him, I would imagine. At the very least, Gabe is competing defensively, right?
Sure.
And and like Max wasn't even competing defensively. So like I think Gabe deserves a lot of credit for that. But at the end of the day, it's like he is too small and nowhere near impactful enough defensively to make up for the tire fire that he has been on offense.
Right. And again, like I understand your point there. And I think that's fair as well that, you know, Gabe probably wants the ball a little bit more, but like he's a player that's played with stars before. I don't think the ask should be so gigantic in terms of what he was asked to do before he was here and what he's on this team. Like, I think it's fair to expect him to hit 35% of his threes. That's an extremely fair low bar. Wide open shots, by the way. I think it's a fair ask to be able to like run a pick and roll and not look like you touched a basketball for the first time like that day. You know, like I think that's a fair ask of Gabe Vincent, and like the idea that we're not even getting that to me. And yeah, he is defending. Like he is defending well, he's defending hard. He's being an adult defender. Like he doesn't make mistakes, doesn't reach. His mistakes are like he's just he's listed at like 6'3", which I
don't believe it at all.
I don't think that is probably closer to 6'1", but like that's his main defensive flaw, is that he's just too short. But yeah, the offense just has to, like, the amount of players that can survive not being absolute zeros on offense while still being super positive defenders are like the Carusos, the Jrue Holidays, the Derek Whites, and even those guys are guys who've learned. Alex Caruso, Anthony, don't look at his shooting numbers, it might ruin your night a little bit as well, but he's shooting like 40-something% from three as well. Yeah. So yeah, there has to be some offensive production. I watched a lot of that. I don't have much to do in the summer, so I watched a lot of that Gabe Vincent playoff run. Like, that was a player that had a lot of offensive skills. That wasn't, I know you bring up the streakiness in shooting, but yeah, it's a sad outcome that he's become.
All right. That, I think, is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. What's today? Wednesday. Wednesday. Lakers play again on Friday. We will have another show here tomorrow at some point, probably in the afternoon, I believe. To those of you who are interested in more NBA and like global basketball stuff, I hope you guys also tune into the Basketball Passport. That will be tomorrow early morning West Coast time, like 7:30. So you guys could watch Lee and I on your way to work. And yeah, until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Raj Chapalu. This has been the Lakers Lounge podcast. Please have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Please subscribe, hit that like button, comment, rate, review, all of that good stuff, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow.